Welcome to This Is The Way Phase 4. I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo. This is a podcast about the stories Marvel Studios tells on Disney+. It all started with WandaVision back in January of 2021. We've reached Season 1 of Moon Knight, a short season of just 6 episodes. As of this podcast, Episode 5 is now streaming, and that's what I'm discussing today. The show appears to be a one-and-done miniseries. It premiered March 30th, 2022. Episode 2 came out April 6th, Episode 3 April 13th, Episode 4 April 20th, and Episode 5 on April 27th. I tweeted out that I felt like this was a necessary episode for the storytelling, but a waste of precious time when you only have 6 episodes. That's Disney and Marvel's decision, but this is the true Achilles heel of having such short seasons. It ruins the pace. And it's a shame because you can't tell the story well without talking about Mark Spector's past, and Season 1 is the place to do that. Part of the problem is also that Disney has become so woke as to discourage certain types of discussion about psychological disorders because of how liberal the collegiate study of psychology has become. We're on a path of the writer's choosing here, and I'm not sure that having Mark and Steven waking up in the hospital setting throughout the show would have been more effective, but when you try to compress everything you want to say about Mark's dissociative identity disorder manifestation and do it right before the finale, you're almost promising the viewer that the finale will make up for the interruption in the flow. We'll see next week with the finale set for May 4th. If you're planning on listening further now, you must assume that any content officially released by Marvel Studios as of this recording is fair game for discussion. I don't set out to spoil listeners, but the premise of this podcast is discussing what we're seeing. It's right there in the title. This is your last chance to avoid hearing about everything up to and including Moon Knight Season 1, Episode 5.
Final warning.
Hello? Where are you?
Episode 5 is called Asylum. The word serves dual purposes here. It describes a real physical place, and I have to admit my disappointment that even online dictionaries are now making political calls about words. The meaning of asylum that described it as an institution offering shelter and support to people who are mentally ill was flagged as dated. It's a word that describes a place. It's not dated. It may not be politically correct to certain people, but this is one of the biggest problems that we are facing in our world today. The other meaning, the one that the online dictionary used by Google decided was the main meaning, said, protection granted by a nation to someone who has left their native country as a political refugee. I rest my case. Well, there's also another part of that definition that says a shelter or protection from danger. And that's the meaning that I took it to mean, because I found it interesting. The words derived from ancient Greek for without seizure and went on to mean a place of refuge in Middle English. That place of refuge was the actual meaning that I thought of first when I read it in context of the show. And then there's further context of the mental institution immediately following that when you read that. Anyway, the episode has a Disney Plus stated runtime of 50 minutes. It's the second shortest runtime behind the premiere. From just after the Disney Plus splash to the start of the end credits is around 41 minutes, 11 seconds. For this series, descriptions of each episode were different on the episodes tab when compared to the main show page after you selected and started an episode. Episode 5 changed things up. Both the thumbnail and the long description match. The descriptions in both places read, Mark and Steven search through their memories to find the truth, or become left behind.
Oh, mate, thank you. Oh, thanks, cheers.
The director for Episode 5 is Mohamed Diab, and he will be in the chair for the finale as well. Writers are credited as Rebecca Kirsch and Matthew Orton. I guess they're giving producers a shot at writing. Oscar Isaac still playing Stephen Grant, Moon Knight, Mr. Knight's Mark Spector role. He is joined in the Mark Spector role by two others, though. Carlos Sanchez plays young Mark, and David Jake Rodriguez plays teenage Mark. Mark's mother, Wendy, is Fernanda Andrade. She played Christina Santos in the 2016 Marvel TV movie Marvel's Most Wanted. So there's her previous connection to Disney stuff. Mark's father, Elias, is Ray Lucas. Not his first Marvel role either. He played a detective in Luke Cage, the formerly Netflix series, now also on Disney+. Oscar Isaac's brother, Michael, even receives a credit for appearing as the Mark Spector Stephen Grant double. F. Murray Abraham's voice is heard as Khonshu in the episode, and we do catch a brief glimpse of him, so the mo-cap performance of Kareem El-Hakim is also credited. Ethan Hawke is Arthur Harrow, and in the credits, he is not listed as Dr. Harrow, but as Arthur Harrow. I don't think that's a hint to what's real and what isn't, but I do think it fits. Although with all Mark's alters being named in the credits, they could have also credited Hawke as playing the doctor part of the role as well. Towerette is here, but it's her voice, because we never see an avatar of Towerette, just Towerette herself as a hippopotamus. It's Antonia Salib providing the voice, but this time she says quite a bit more than just,
"Hi."
Pressing play on episode 5, you get the Disney splash, then a previously on segment, and the Marvel Studios slate and fanfare are back. There's running water in a dark cave and a boy screams help, then a shot of a woman's face coming into focus, looking right into the camera, shouting, "This is all your fault." As she finishes that phrase, Towerette from the end of last episode is seen screaming, her mouth wide open, and Mark and Steven are still screaming at the sight of her. Then it's Mark back in the office chair of Dr. Harrow screaming. Harrow tries calming Mark down. Mark has a broken nose, apparently. Neither he or Steven did just a moment ago, so, you know, is this him or is this a different personality? I think it's Mark here because he's aware. We haven't yet been made aware of another personality like Jake Lockley or whatever the other personality from the comics is. Harold's first statement to Mark in this episode is that he didn't shoot him. He says Mark's mind is like a pendulum swinging back and forth between sense and nonsense. Violently vacillating was his phrase. He tries getting Mark to retrace his steps and makes a curious, but I think intentional, error. Harrow in reality had an almost supernatural ability to guess what was going on in Mark, Steven, and even Layla's minds. Even seemingly hearing Khonshu when he said he couldn't. Now here he makes an error saying Mark saw a rhinoceros.
"You were with a rhinoceros and
hippopotamus."
"You're right. You're right. It was a hippopotamus, and but it talked."
I can't tell you why the error, but I think it was intentional. Dr. Harrow thinks that Mark realizing how ridiculous this all seems is a good sign. Mark feigns wellness, but as I mentioned last podcast, he grabs a very sharp crystal pyramid from the desk. It shouldn't be there. Harrow, though, presses the panic button on his chair, alerts the orderlies, Bobby and Billy. Mark persists in his belief that Harrow is evil and will release evil on the world. So if this was Jake, then Jake is in on it, right? He knows all of the things that are happening. But Bobby and Billy hold him and inject him right in the neck with drugs.
"Listen, I am not your enemy!"
"Oh, man. Wow, these meds are really amazing.
Is he always so intense?"
I'm telling you, if this show ends and it's Jake Lockley in a alley somewhere shooting up drugs, I will be so angry. That would not be a good way to end this show. I'm telling you right now, there will be flames from the heavens on Twitter and elsewhere. If they do that to the show, you may get a 2-minute Episode 6 discussion where I say, "This show is terrible. The end." Anyway, suddenly both he and Steven are back in front of the hippo. Towerette is confused because I guess according to her records, there's one soul on board and she's met with what she thinks at first are twins. Mark is confused as well and says as much. He believes he was just shot to death and she informs him, "Yeah, that's what happened." Steven's the one catching on here.
"Welcome, gentle travelers, to the realm of the Juat."
"Juat, the Egyptian underworld. This is Towerette, goddess of women and children,
and she's guiding us through our journey to the afterlife.
Mark is disappointed to learn that this is the afterlife, the Egyptian underworld of the Duat.
This is the afterlife? The afterlife?
An afterlife, not the afterlife. You'd be surprised how many intersectional planes of untethered consciousness exist.
Yeah.
Like the ancestral plane. Oh, just gorgeous.
That line establishes something very interesting about life and death in the MCU for us on screen for the first time. There are planes where consciousness is untethered. So, does that mean Vormir is one of those places? Or maybe even just the void where Gamora and Natasha disappear to? Does that mean that that void is accessible? Maybe through the multiverse? If someone can reach the Duat and the Field of Reeds without, you know, a tethered consciousness, how could we reach them? Or is that taking things a step too far? I think maybe we're, or at least me, I'm implying a little bit too much, but it should be possible, right? Towerette goes through a spiel, and in fact, the boat is what I predicted. I predicted last episode that we were definitely on a boat, and that's where they are. The boat, however, is not exactly it's whatever you make of it, I suppose. Well, we find this out because Mark is starting to believe what Harrow said was true. He calls Arthur Doctor, and Steven's confused. Towerette explains, it's impossible for the human mind to comprehend the Duat. Each person constructs their own imagery to help them through this process. Mark is starting to resign himself to the possibility that he is actually insane. The way Towerette describes this creation of the psych ward sounds a lot like something Harrow just told him.
The struggling mind will often build places to seek shelter for different aspects of the self from our most traumatic memories. It's called just an organizing principle, okay? Some people, they see a castle, right? Somebody else will see a maze or a library.
Or a psych ward?
Yeah, or it could be. It could be a psych ward, yeah.
Because the Duat's true nature is impossible for the human mind to comprehend,
right?
You may perceive this realm as something more easily recognizable to you. A psych ward's a first for me, but hey, we can roll with it, right?
Why would we imagine this realm to be a psychiatric hospital?
Because we're insane.
Except when he goes through the doors, he really is on that boat. He realizes he's not crazy. It's interesting then, though, that he so readily accepts the explanations given to him by what he's experiencing in each moment. Not, though, when he's in the office. You know, Dr. Harrow's telling him, believe this place is real, but he doesn't believe that. He does believe it when he's experiencing it elsewhere on the boat. Something about that's always off to him, the office. This seems more real to him for some reason. Then Towerette reaches into their bodies and pulls out their hearts.
We're sailing to Arut, to the Field of Reed, right, Towerette?
Oh, so he's the smart one, hey? Well, if your heart's balanced in life, then you will spend eternity in paradise. The Field of Reeds. But before we get there, I've just got to do a quick little... Oh, goody! It worked! Look at that! It was little old me worrying I'd blow your chest wide open.
She pulls out two hearts, and that is not an unintentional thing. That is very important. Even though we end up at the end seeing two hearts on the scales when it balances, and spoiler alert, it balances, and you know that if you've already seen the episode, that's still an important distinction that she pulls out two hearts. Not even that she reached into one body and pulled out two hearts. She reached into both Mark and Steven and pulled out a separate heart. Steven explains the scales must balance before they reach Arut, the Field of Reeds. This is not traditional Egyptian mythology, nor is it usually Towerette's job to ferry those souls, but as a fertility goddess, it does make sense she's there for the soul's rebirth, and she did help people with that process of death, but she didn't drive the ferry. Mark's reaction to the confusion on the deck is, hey, let's kill Towerett and steal the boat. Stevens, though, is one of understanding. I think the stark contrasts are there to remind us that these two extremes are part of the same soul, even with two hearts. In fact, I'm pretty sure that's the case because I think that's why the scales won't balance. Towerett tells them, use the boat. It's got all their past memories on board. Resolve your issues, balance the scales before it's too late.
What are we going to do here? We're going to revisit every single memory I've ever had?
How they do it is looking into the hospital rooms at past memories. Each room seems to have a different memory. Mark feels like going around like that will take way too long. A voice, though, calls out for help. So they investigate and come upon the common room, which is now dark, and instead of being filled with patients, it's filled with the frozen corpses of the dead. These are people Mark remembers killing for Moon Knight.
You killed all of them?
They were criminals, murderers, predators, the worst of the worst. Can't you want them punished?
That's what he meant by protecting the travelers of the night.
And you remember each person.
You tried taking a life.
Steven notices, however, a small boy is standing there watching. He's not frozen. Steven shudders at the thought that Mark killed a child. And remember, Steven pointed out in episode 2 that killing a child based on future evils would be horrible. So who is this boy? It is someone Mark killed. Indirectly. It's his brother Randall.
Roro?
Mom, come check out my drawing.
He drew the fish with only one fin.
Mark, be nice to your little brother.
Steven followed the boy, and we see a lot of clues, like the fish, a dead bird on the ground, rain falling and water dripping on rocks. The fact is, Mark led his little brother into a cave during a storm, and his brother drowned. Mark then finds a room at the back of the hospital leading to the Shiva for his brother, Randall, and Mark's mother will not forgive him.
You were supposed to keep him safe?
Steven, let's go.
Let him drown. This is all... your fault! This is all your fault!
Not just now. She will never forgive him. Steven chases after young Mark now, after having chased Randall into the memory preceding his death. The stairs of their Chicago brownstone serve as a way to travel through the years in the house. Years of torment by his mother drove him away. We see an 8th, 12th birthday, and before Steven can make his way into Mark's bedroom, he's stopped. Mark intervenes and opens a side door or opens a way to the outside to the street instead.
She will get help. And we will fix this. You're supposed to fix this. I mean, why haven't you?
I cannot lose another son.
We saw Mark's dad trying to be the bridge constantly, but imagine being a father who lost one son to the whims of your other son. Now, I'm not forgiving the parents here. But Mark, being young, was forced to live his life while his parents worked through their own pain. Mark didn't really have help doing that on his own. Mark leaves and the memories pick up in Egypt.
Turns out going AWOL in a fugue state gets you discharged from the military. Didn't have a ton of options after that, so I went work for hire for my old CO, Bushman. The job was to raid an Egyptian tomb. Bushman changed the plan. Called for no witnesses, and I couldn't live with that.
Is that... Dr. Foley, Layla's dad.
Mark explains his backstory, how he ended up a mercenary. That backstory is also tied to his tether with Khonshu. We see the temple where Mark pledged himself to the moon god's service to save himself. Something he said to Steven reveals just what he thinks of himself.
Mark, he was taking advantage of you.
Well, it was just a way for me to keep being what I've always been. A killer.
He's speaking there of killing his brother. It's an unresolved issue. It's the unresolved issue. It's what he'll have to work out with himself. He's finally going to have to come to terms with what he really is, not just what he chose to become, to avoid his first death.
Rise and live again as my fist of vengeance, as my Moon Knight.
The two parts of Mark beg Towerett for help on the deck of the boat. She's sympathetic, but she points out that even if they are sent back, they'll be going to a dead body. Steven begs her to get Layla to free Khonshu so they can return to the body with healing armor. It's a long shot, but Tarut redirects the funerary boat to the gate of Osiris. Again, Disney and Marvel are taking liberties with actual funerary rites that are just depicted in hieroglyphs. There are gates, magic spells, recitations that are involved before the end of the journey is at Osiris's gate, and then that's where the hearts are supposed to be weighed. Here in this show, Tara indicates Osiris won't appreciate the change of plans. Now, I wonder if we'll see a jackal-headed Osiris, like the actual god, like Tauret is here, or if we'll just see the avatars from here on out. Maybe Layla will have to track down Selim or Yatsil for help. Tauret's concession to turn the boat around seemingly only happens because she recognizes souls are falling like meteors into the Duat. They are being judged before their time, she says. Steven and Mark head inside, and Steven wants to visit the room they wouldn't go to earlier. Mark doesn't want to reveal what happens. Steven warns Mark, but by doing so, he uses a phrase of his mother's that triggers Mark.
If we don't get back and Harrow succeeds and all those people die, if Layla dies, that's on your head. It'll be all your fault.
No, 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 you can't! I won't do it! I won't do it! You can't make me! You can't make me!
I won't do it!
Stop it, stop it.
Didn't you inject me with something?
You watch too many movies.
I don't mean trigger in the PC way. I mean it causes a break, and Mark is back in Dr. Harrow's office. Harrow once again plays things calm and cool. He indirectly reaffirms Mark's issues with himself.
Do you think you created Steven to hide from all the awful things you feel you've done in your life? Or do you think Steven created Mark to punish the world for what your mother did to you?
I find it interesting, then, that Harrow in this part of his memories is being helpful, not harmful. Harrow in the real world used that phrasing of wanting to help Steven, but he was always really actually trying to kill him. He wanted to help Mark, he would say. He ends up giving Mark a glass of life-giving water on the boat in the desert of the Duat. It's life-giving because Harrow's advice is taken. Mark peers into the bottom of the glass at his reflection.
You're gonna have to open up to Steven. There can be no progress without understanding. Can you do that? Can you open up to Steven?
Mark talks to Steven. Steven and Mark end up in the room where Steven was created. After the first transition from Mark to Steven, Steven, the adult version, repeats the words that the young Steven says.
It's not my mom. Open this door! Bloody hell. Look at the state of this place. Better sort it out before mom sees it.
Marvel has been playing amateur psychologist with us in several shows, haven't they? We had Wanda going back through her trauma in the second to last episode with Angela Harkness. Loki went through the end of time with several versions of himself in the second to last episode. Yeah, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier and Hawkeye similarly, but to lesser extents, had, you know, kind of feel-good episodes, you know, working on the boat and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and Hawkeye was come to terms with the Ronin. What If probably could have put the Doctor Strange episode before the finale two-parter. That would have been interesting, but the Thor episode then wouldn't have made as much sense because the ending there was the what?
When danger is near, Stephen Grant has no fear. You made me up.
Now, I had loving parents, but seeing Mark's mother come into the room and grab the belt, call her son a disgusting human, that was rough. You know, it still brings tears to my eyes.
Why do you have to make him do this?
I want to see what she did. I want to see what she did.
Disgusting.
You're not meant to see that. You're not meant to see that. That's the whole point of you.
It's Mark that reveals something to Steven this time. It's not just that he was created, no. It's that his mother was hateful and resented him, and that she's dead. Steven can't handle this, and like Mark did before him, he escapes to the room with Dr. Harrell by willing it.
You've gotten to live thinking that she loved you, that she was kind, that she's still alive.
I brought us here?
After your mother passed.
Oi, don't say that. That's not true. That's not true.
Oh, I'm so, I must.
Are you having a laugh as well? Because I don't want to hear it.
Stephen, I must.
You say that again. My mother is alive. You say that again. I will freak out. I promise.
I must be mistaken. Okay. Would you like to speak with her? What do we call her?
Harrow informs Stephen that it was he who brought the two to the doctor. This is a new piece of information to us all. The breaks between Stephen and Mark have been happening since childhood, but only recently, since the death of their mother, have the two personalities trapped in Mark's mind been bleeding together. Now, a moment on that. Don't write to me and say I shouldn't be calling them that, personalities. Now, if a community of doctors suddenly decides we should be calling water H2O and that using the word water is harmful, you wouldn't listen to that nonsense, and neither should I. You'd be afraid to use terms that describe perfectly what's going on if you listen to these people. For me to only call them alters is to fall into that trap that only certain people are experts, and only they should be listened to. And I'm not talking because they studied things. This is a recent development. This is not some ancient knowledge that has been just discovered. This is just a decision that they made. Now, if that's the case, if we're going to base our vocabulary on the current times, then why do we show shows like this at all? Mark and Steven have had different personhoods inside this show right up to and including the fact that, remember, Tyrant pulled out a heart out of each soul. Pretending that using the word alter is less harmful is more harmful, because it's giving power to this group of individuals over our vocabulary. Those doctors do not own vocabulary, and they don't speak for me. Don't let them speak for you either.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes, this is Dr. Harrow.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen's here. He'd like to speak with you.
Stephen, would you like to speak to your mother?
Stephen admits his mother is dead. He sees Mark break in the street they witnessed earlier in the episode. Now there's context there. Mark broke in the street, not able to come to terms with the passing of his mother being the end of any chance for reconciliation. Stephen comforts Mark. The breakthrough finally happens. Mark forgives himself through Stephen.
I shouldn't have brought him in a cage.
Hey. He was just a child. It wasn't your fault.
After the breakthrough, the underworld breaks through to their memories, causing the ground to shake. Stephen and Mark head back out to the deck of the ship, and Towerette breaks some bad news to them. They've reached the gates of Osiris, but...
I'm so sorry. Your scales never balanced. Our journey's come to an end. I cannot stop the inevitable. I was really rooting for you guys, but the unbalanced souls of the Juat now must claim yours.
The souls of those Mark has killed start to climb onto the boat. Mark fights back, but without real passion. He's kind of resigning himself to his fate here. He could do better than this, but he's overtaken, and that leaves Stephen to realize he must also fight. And he saves Mark from being heaved overboard and falling into the sands below. More and more souls, though, keep coming. They're trying to claim Mark. They don't really seem to be interested in Stephen. They seem to be heading toward Mark, and Stephen takes him out with a cricket bat, he calls it. That makes it all the more sad when Mark is once again about to be pulled overboard, only for Stephen to charge forward. He knocks the sandy soul off the Duat, and he also falls overboard.
Stephen! Stephen! Stephen!
Again, Oscar Isaac's performance cannot be impeached here. It is really good. He's grown up with Stephen, Mark has. His brother passed. So this is as close to a brother as he could have had. Part of himself. In fact, part of himself that just saved himself. Not literally, I'm speaking of, on the Duat. He saved himself by forgiving himself. Stephen gets to his feet in the sand, but falls to his knees. freezing in place in a pose similar to that of Crawley in episode 2 with his hand outstretched.
The scales are balanced.
Back on the boat, Steven's demise reconciles the scales. Mark is immediately transported to the field of reeds, and that's where our episode ends. What about Layla, though? Wasn't she in the tomb? What about the Ushabti? We see souls falling from the sky. Does this mean she failed? And the Ushabti fell into Harrow's hands? Why on earth would Mark now, having reached heaven, even care what happens in the mortal realm? Why would he really care? I mean, up to the point where you get to heaven, but now you're in heaven. The episode felt like a waste in a 6-episode series, because of the things it didn't do, not because of what it did. This was important and emotional. You needed this episode for character development. There should have been 3 more episodes, though. I think the blame is on the showrunner. If you only got 6, you better trim all the fat away. And I didn't need a huge action sequence. I just don't think there are any indications here about what the stakes are. What are the stakes now? Mark is safe. He's dead, but he's safe. He's in heaven. You're telling me a man in paradise is going to come back for anything? I don't feel like you've shown me why. Even in popular culture, we always see, like in Ghost, you know, Patrick Swayze's character, once he goes to the light, that's it. He stays back before he gets to the light, but once he gets to the light, he doesn't come back. Mark is in heaven. He is in the field of reeds. I don't feel like you've shown me why he should come back. As a matter of fact, I think you proved with this episode that this man seeking an unending peace that he never had just found his peace. Nothing we've learned about him tells me he's got reasons, even Layla, to go back. He's not told he owes anyone anything. His peace isn't threatened. As powerful as it was to see his origins, as relatable as the loss of his brother and his mother and his childhood and his youth might be, we're left with what the story is, not what it could be. This episode, one we know is not the end, feels like it should be the end. It's like a Saturday Night Live skit that they can't figure out a good way to end, so they do something that makes no sense with the rest of the skit. It just makes no sense. Kind of calls back to that nonsense or sensical talk with Harrow earlier in the episode. We needed like a post-credit or a mid-credit scene with, you know, this is what's happening back on Earth 616. Now, of course, we're going to see that next episode. Cinematically speaking, though, we just finished with Mark. He's dead. He's in heaven. There are no stakes anymore. If something can happen to Mark there because of what Harrow is doing on the real world, in the real world, well, we should have already been told that already. You could have done that with one line. As it is, the ending lacks,
flourish!
Let me know what you think. I'll be back again with a final discussion podcast sometime after episode 5 becomes available on May 4th. The story will be by Danielle Iman and Jeremy Slater, the showrunner. Teleplay by Jeremy Slater and Peter Cameron and Sabir Pirzada. Mohamed Diab will again direct. That's all for today, so please check out our links on Linktree at linktr.ee/thewayphase4. And send your email to thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com. If Star Wars is more of your interest, I also produce and host This Is The Way podcast. We're getting ready for Obi-Wan Kenobi at the end of May, and May the 4th will be next week. Links for that show can also be found on Linktree at linktr.ee/thisisthewaypod. Thank you so much for listening to This Is The Way Phase 4's Season 1, Episode 5 discussion of Moon Knight. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.